the brave, valiant souls who have fought and bled for the good of our country, let us not forget the courageous, undaunted Frederick Douglass, who, like the soldiers in the War for Independence, fought for freedom. He battled not against an oppressive king, but the inhumane institution of slavery. He wielded not the sword, but a commanding power of speech that proved sharper than a fine blade. He did not shoot balls of lead from a musket, but rather the written word that stung the hearts of his readers and listeners. On the edge of a plantation in Maryland, Frederick Augustus Washington Bailey was born a slave in his grandparents' cabin. Although his father was likely white, something he always heard whispered, his mother was a slave. Frederick heard talk that his father may have been his master, but no matter his paternity, all children born to slave mothers were slaves. Frederick was raised along the banks of the Tuckahoe River by his grandmother. He barely knew his mother. It was the custom to separate slave babies from their mothers to prevent attachment. His mother was taken to work on a plantation 12 miles away. He only saw her a handful of times. When she would walk the long distance at night after a full day of working in the fields to see her little boy. His mind could not even recollect a clear picture of her. She once brought him a gingerbread cake in the shape of a heart, a memory solidified by his ever-present hunger. She lay down next to him while he fell asleep, but was gone when he woke. She was required to be back in the fields by morning, and so hurried the 12 miles back to work. His mother died when he was 7 years old, and he was told several weeks after the fact. He didn't feel much at the news, as his mother was not much more than an acquaintance to him. Little Frederick's only article of clothing was a long, coarse linen shirt. The slave children were fed a corn mush in a trough outside, just like the pigs. The only spoon he had was half an oyster shell. He had no bed or blanket to sleep on, but slept on the hard clay floor of the slave kitchen. He recalled stealing a bag that held corn and crawling in head first for warmth during the winter months. His feet were so frostbitten and cracked from cold winter nights that scars remained even into his adulthood. As brutal as the winters could be, they paled in comparison to the beatings and whippings he witnessed as a very small boy, and which he would soon experience himself. It struck me with awful force. It was the blood-stained gate, the entrance to the hell of slavery through which I was about to pass. Deliverance came to some extent at 8 years old when his master died, and he was sent to Baltimore to live in the city with Hugh and Sophia Auld. For the first time in his life, Frederick was fully clothed, had warm blankets and a bed to sleep in, and he had enough to eat. He believed his move to Baltimore was a special interposition of divine providence. From my earliest recollection, I date the entertainment of a deep conviction that slavery would not always be able to hold me within its foul embrace. And in the darkest hours of my career in slavery, this living word of faith and spirit of hope departed not from me, but remained like ministering angels to cheer me through the gloom. This good spirit was from God, and to Him I offer thanksgiving and praise. Sophia Auld began teaching Frederick the alphabet. She would teach him his letters and how to spell small words, but that all stopped when her husband Hugh found out about it. He lectured his wife in front of Frederick about teaching a slave anything. If you teach him how to read, there would be no keeping him. It would forever unfit him to be a slave. Frederick recalled, "From that moment, I understood the pathway from slavery to freedom." Frederick's mind and heart were now fixed upon two things, learning and escaping. Each of them was to the same end, freedom. He became friends with the white children that lived nearby. He would challenge the boys to a writing contest, insisting he could write just as well. Frederick would then write with a lump of chalk on a fence or pavement, showing them that he could write and say, "Beat that." The boys would then try to outdo him, and Frederick gleaned all that he could from the boys who unknowingly taught him how to write. When Frederick ran errands for his master, he would take bread with him, of which he could have as much as he wanted. "This bread I used to bestow upon the hungry little urchins who, in return, would give me that more valuable bread of knowledge." Around that time, at age 12, Frederick got a hold of a book, The Columbian Orator. It contained anti-slavery speeches that gave utterance to his thoughts and desires. Every chance he got, he read it over and over, speaking the words aloud. The more he learned and read, the more the pain of his bondage tortured him. "That very discontentment which Master Hugh had predicted would follow my learning to read had already come, to torment and sting my soul to unutterable anguish. It was this everlasting thinking of my condition that tormented me. There was no getting rid of it. It was pressed upon me by every object within sight or hearing, animate or inanimate. The silver trump of freedom had roused my soul to eternal wakefulness." The kind mistress who had initially taught Frederick his letters fell victim in a different way to the evil of slavery. At first described as having astonishing goodness, her face was made of heavenly smiles and her voice of tranquil music. Slavery gradually changed her into a brute. She became mean, harsh, and angry. "No man can put a chain about the ankle of his fellow man without at last finding the other end fastened about his own neck," he later wrote. Despite the negative change in Sophia, he much preferred her and Hugh to his next master, Thomas Auld. When Frederick was 14, after living a somewhat comfortable life in the city, he was forced to return with Thomas Auld back to the country. Thomas and his wife matched each other in their unscrupulous meanness. He and their other slaves were nearly starved, having to beg and steal for sufficient food. Thomas Auld disapproved of Frederick's impertinence, claiming that living in the city had ruined him. When a number of severe whippings failed to humble Frederick, he sent the 16-year-old to live with a poor farmer named Covey, known as the Slave Breaker, because of his brutality. Indeed, Frederick said, his spirit was crushed within a few months of living on Covey's farm, where he worked every waking hour and whipped so often his back rarely had time to heal. His spark had extinguished, and his passion for reading died. He feared Covey would kill him, and he half welcomed the thought. One summer morning on Covey's plantation, everything changed for Frederick. Covey had beaten him within inches of his life a few days prior. As Frederick now had little will to live, he decided to resist Covey and fight. And if he died, it would be better than living under those torturous conditions. As Covey tried to get a hold of Frederick, he deflected every blow. He was only 16, but was larger than Covey and determined that he would not be whipped again. For 2 hours they fought until Covey gave up and told Frederick to get to work. Covey never did whip him again. "I was a changed being after that fight. I was nothing before. I was a man now. It inspired me with a new determination to be a free man." Frederick worked for Covey for 6 more months before he was sent to a new master, Mr. Freeland. Frederick referred to Mr. Freeland as a kind master who allowed Frederick to start a Sabbath school, teaching black youths how to read and write. Nevertheless, the passion to be a free man burned inside Frederick and could not be extinguished. He convinced a few fellow slaves, dear friends of his, to escape with him. However, they were caught in their scheme before they even set off. After sitting in jail for a week, afraid he would be sent far off to the West Indies, Frederick was sent back to Hugh and Sophia in Baltimore. There, he was hired out to work in a shipyard where he could learn a trade, that of caulking or making the ships watertight. He worked there for 8 months until he was nearly beaten to death by a group of white workers. It was not the first time he had been attacked or the first time he nearly lost his life. Master Hugh was a foreman at another shipyard, so he took Frederick to work with him. Within a year, he was earning the highest wages of a caulker in Baltimore, every penny of which he was obliged to turn over to Master Hugh. That same year, in September 1838, 20-year-old Frederick made another escape attempt. He knew this time that he needed to make it to the far north, or he would surely end up being sold to the far south, where his chances of escape would be squashed entirely. There were countless dangers and obstacles that could thwart his objective. He thought of Patrick Henry's bold statement, "Give me liberty or give me death." Frederick wrote, "I have only one life to lose. I had as well be killed running as die standing. Only think of it, 100 miles north and I am free. Try it? Yes, God helping me, I will." On the morning of September 3rd, dressed like a sailor, he boarded a northbound train. He carried with him the borrowed papers of a free black sailor, for surely he would be questioned. Free black people were required to carry papers with them that proved their freedom. After multiple train rides, a ferry, and a steamboat, he arrived in New York City on the morning of September 4th. Miraculously, he was free at last. "A new world had opened upon me. I lived more in one day than in a year of my slave life. It was a time of joyous excitement which words can but tamely describe. I felt as one might feel upon escaping from a den of hungry lions." His joy was stifled, however, when he learned that he could trust no one, even other African Americans. Slave hunters were everywhere. He no longer had chains, but for the time, he also had no work, no food or shelter, and no friends. He found his way to an abolitionist safe house that provided aid. He immediately sent for his wife-to-be, Anna Murray. She was a free black woman he had met and fallen in love with in Baltimore. She had provided him with the sailor clothing as well as some of her savings to pay the train and boat fares for his escape. They were married on September 15th by a black Presbyterian minister. Like most fugitive slaves, Frederick wanted a new name to represent his new life as a free man. A friend of his picked the name Douglas, who was the heroic protagonist in a beautiful poem called "Lady of the Lake" by Sir Walter Scott. Anna and Frederick settled in New Bedford, Massachusetts, a strong abolitionist city where Frederick could work and be relatively safe. He was accustomed to hard work and long hours, and he often worked 6 days and 2 nights a week. He didn't mind at all, though, for he was a free man, earning his own wages. The Liberator was an abolitionist newspaper run by William Lloyd Garrison, to which Frederick subscribed. The words of the Liberator resonated so strongly with Frederick's soul that he admitted, "His paper took a place in my heart second only to the Bible." He began attending abolition meetings whenever he could, but he never imagined speaking at one. In 1841, however, he attended an abolition convention sponsored by Garrison's American Anti-Slavery Society in Nantucket. Frederick was invited to take the stage and share his story of slavery. The crowd of thousands was so moved that he was asked to join the society as a lecturer. Frederick, at this time only 23 years old, was hesitant to speak for fear of being captured, but ultimately agreed because he felt a duty to speak on behalf of his people. Frederick spoke with such forcefulness and eloquence that many people began to doubt whether he was ever a slave at all. He was far too educated and well-spoken to have ever been a slave on a plantation, people said. Angered by the accusations of fraud, Frederick decided to write his autobiography complete with names and dates as proof of his experiences. Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave, was published in 1845 and became a sensation. In 3 years, it was reprinted 9 times, sold 11,000 copies, and was translated and printed in Europe. It opened the eyes of people to the horrors of slavery and helped push the abolition movement forward. Because of the new publicity and attention, Frederick's supporters feared he would be found by his owner and captured. They encouraged him to spend some time in Europe. While there, he was amazed that he could ride in any train car or coach, or sit down to eat with white people, and no one denied him service or ridiculed him for being black. He was amazed that aristocrats, lords and ladies flocked to hear his speeches. British friends and admirers raised 150 British pounds, about $20,000 today, to buy his freedom from his master, Thomas Auld. Frederick no longer had to worry about being captured or returned to slavery. At 29 years old, he was officially and forever free. After returning from Europe in 1847, Frederick moved his family to Rochester, New York, where he started an abolitionist newspaper called the North Star. It was aptly named for the North Star that runaway slaves followed to freedom. Its motto was, "Right is of no sex, truth is of no color, God is the father of us all, and we are all brethren." In opposition to some abolitionists, Frederick Douglass was a firm supporter of the Constitution. He believed everything in it called for the equal treatment of all people, and that it was the key document which supported the abolition of slavery. "Interpreted as it ought to be interpreted," he declared, "the Constitution is a glorious liberty document." In a speech given in May 1857, he asserted, "All I ask of the American people is that they live up to the Constitution, adopt its principles, imbibe its spirit, and enforce its provisions. When this is done, the wounds of my bleeding people will be healed, the chain will no longer rust on their ankles, their backs will no longer be torn by the bloody lash, and liberty, the glorious birthright of our common humanity, will become the inheritance of all the inhabitants of this highly favored country." Frederick spent the last 18 years of his life serving in various government posts, including as the first black U.S. Marshal and as Minister to Haiti. During his lifetime, he was able to see his dream realized with the emancipation of all slaves in the 13th Amendment. Soon after, the right to vote was given to African-American males in the 14th Amendment. He died of a heart attack in 1895 at the age of 77, having just left a meeting of the National Women's Council, where he had sat by his longtime friend, Susan B. Anthony. People from all over the country, black and white, came to his funeral to honor the life of a remarkable man. 15 years before his death, Frederick visited his previous master, Captain Thomas Auld, who was 84 years old and did not have long to live. Despite their history, there were no bitter feelings between the two. Frederick held Auld's trembling hand as the two shared sentiments of forgiveness and kindness. Frederick wrote, "I regarded him, as I did myself, a victim of the circumstances of birth, education, law, and custom. Our courses had been determined for us, not by us. We had both been flung by powers that did not ask our consent upon a mighty current of life, which we could neither resist nor control. By this current, he was a master, and I was a slave. But now, our lives were verging towards a point where differences disappear, where even the constancy of hate breaks down, and where the clouds of pride, passion, and selfishness vanish before the brightness of infinite light. At such a time, and in such a place, when a man is about closing his eyes on the world and ready to step into the eternal unknown. No word of reproach or bitterness should reach him or fall from his lips. And on this occasion, there was to this rule no transgression on either side. Having lived the humiliation, degradation, and brutality of slavery, Frederick Douglass was a potent weapon in the fight against it. Like Moses, who was saved for a purpose, Frederick Douglass was raised up as a luminary who helped light the way to the emancipation of his people. From a life of bondage and abject misery, to becoming a statesman and a world-renowned author and orator, the life of Frederick Douglass shows us that no matter our circumstances or our past, we can use our lives to serve others in the pursuit of peace, unity, and justice.